Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are coming fresh off of UFC 314. Let me just tell you guys, this did not disappoint. This did not disappoint in the slightest. And UFC 311, it was hard to follow up, but UFC 314, I can confidently say, is the current best pay-per-view of the year. Current best event, even. I would go as far to say it was fantastic. 10-3 on predictions. Can't get much better than that. One of my favorite fighters won. On today's episode, we will be going through every single fight and discussing what happened and what's next for each of the winners and losers. But it was such a fantastic time. I had a great time watching it. Lexi was down. Ryan, who we've had on before. Walker, who we've had on before. We were all watching it, and it was such a blast. Our buddy Garrett, though, he did get injured, which does suck, but that's a story for another time. Also on today's episode, we will be talking about the NBA and new UFC matchups. We have had some fun new UFC matchups, and as well, the NBA has come to an end, so we're going to go through, discuss the final standings, discuss the final stat leaders, and then give a brief little playoff predictions, or if it's brief, if it's not brief, we'll have to see, but a lot of fun stuff. On today's episode, this is the final UFC podcast, you can say, we are going to be doing for the next week, as we will be doing a WrestleMania-style podcast coming at you later in the week. But let's not waste any more time. Let's kick your week off with a bang as we go through all the action for UFC 314. But first, let's do what we always do on most episodes, and that is new UFC fights. And we have had a couple new UFC announcements, which I am a little bit excited about. First off, UFC Baku, or better known as UFC Azerbaijan, I believe is how you say it. You have your main event guys, Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill, ranked number 4 in the men's light heavyweight division, and Khalil the Warhorse Roundtree Jr., ranked number 7. This has been rebooked. They are supposed to be the main event in Kansas City, April 26th. Now it's Ian Garry, Carl Sprattas, which I can't lie, does entice me a bit more, but these two boys heading over to Baku in Azerbaijan, and they're going to be going at it. You know, Jamal Hill, two-fight losing streak. Obviously, both of them bad. The Para fight was worse than the Jiří Prochazka fight. He did much better against Jiří, but nonetheless, Jiří knocked him out. As for Khalil Roundtree Jr., this dude has completely revitalized his career. People are saying he's in his prime. We're going to see his first performance post-Para fight, where he arguably pushed Alex Para to the toughest point he's been. I know Magomed Ankalaev beat him. I know Adesanya knocked him out, but some about that Khalil Roundtree Jr. fight, where Para was down two rounds, that third round was a toss-up, and he managed to knock him out. It really showed the grit there, so I'm excited to see that one, and that is your UFC Baku main event. Another one for you on that same card, which is going down June 21st, Daria Zelenikova back in action in the women's bantamweight division as she takes on Melissa Mullins. And Melissa Mullins is ranked number 15, oddly enough. Good for her. She's 7-1 in the UFC and holds a win over get this, Daria Zelenikova. Now she's taking on Daria actually it's Zelenikova, I think it is, but Daria, 1-1 in the UFC, has a win over Montezeret Rendon. She's 9-2. Melissa is 7-1. Should be a decent fight. I wonder if Daria, I think she's from Russia, which is close to Azerbaijan, but that has to be why she's fighting on the card. But next three ones I'm excited for. First off, on that UFC Baku card, insane match up here. The number 10 ranked flyweight in the world, Tigran Limbekov, 16-2 professionally, 5-1 in the UFC, most recently fended off the undefeated Clayton Carpenter earlier this year in January, will be welcoming to the UFC Kyoichi Horiguchi. Oh my goodness. And now I do kind of have a sentiment when it comes to Bellator PFL 1 championship guys coming over to the UFC. We're going to talk about that later on the episode. But Kyoichi Horiguchi, Bellator MMA champion, Rizin FF, which I don't know what FF stands for. Rizin, massive promotion in Japan, I believe. Featherweight champion there. Or actually, I think it was bantamweight and flyweight. He's also won a championship in Shoto, Japan. He's phenomenal. Holds wins over Kai Sakura, Sergio Pettis. We recognize those names. All right, massive, massive opportunity. He's 7-1 in the UFC. This guy used to fight in the UFC, and now he's 34-5 with one draw, and he's finally returning to the UFC at 34 years of age. And it's an October birthday. Gotta love him for that. Taking out Tigran Limbekov, I mean, not too much different. He's like 33 years old. Fights out of the same camp as, what's it called, a.k.a. Daniel Cormier, Khabib, Islam Makhachev. He's with the Dagestani boys. He's from Russia. This is a fantastic fight. This is such a good fight, and I don't know, Kyoichi Horiguchi does kind of strike me as someone who can come into the UFC and dominate, but Tigran Limbekov is on an incredible run right now. This is going to be a fantastic fight, and it could be the co-main event for UFC Baku, but it's definitely going to be on the main card. I can guarantee that. Another matchup for you, this one for UFC Nashville going down July 12th. UFC is heading back to Nashville, Tennessee, officially July 12th. Austin Lane, back in another opportunity as he takes on Vitor Petrino. And Vitor Petrino and Austin Lane, both in oddly similar scenarios. You know, Vitor Petrino comes in, beats Tyson Pedro, beats Marcin Petrino, beats Modestus Bukauskas, then runs into Anthony Smith, who humbles him, then runs into another fighter whose name is eluding me. Vitor Petrino got finished his last time out, and I can't remember who. I swear he got knocked out. If I'm not mistaken, Vitor Petrino got knocked out. But nonetheless, Austin Lane picked up a grappling win over Robles Despange to save his UFC tenure in the company. And I will be interested to see this one. Probably going to be on the prelims if you ask me. I'm going Vitor Petrino, but Austin Lane, you never know with him. You never really know what you're going to get out of him. I do say that's the one thing that keeps you guessing, but also does kind of leave you going, oh, is he still worthy to be in the UFC? We'll see in this one. The winner will stay. The loser will probably be cut. And then finally, the last event that we have to discuss with you all, UFC Vegas 106 going down May 17th. The main event, it's been moved from UFC 315 to here as the number 8 ranked welterweight in the world, Gilbert Durinho Burns, back in action as he takes on the number 12 ranked, the 17-0, Michael Morales. This is good. This is really good. Michael Morales, look, this kid's 24 years old, 17-0, 5-0 in the UFC, most recently knocked out Neil Magny in round number 1. This is a massive opportunity for him. As for Gilbert Burns, I mean, it's been tough. It's been tough, you know, having to take on Jack Del Maddalena, having to take on Sean Brady. Before that, you know, Khamzat Chimaev, all right? Picked up wins, obviously, over Jorge Masvidal, Wonderboy Thompson. But for Gilbert Burns, they've really been feeding him killers. They have not made it easy for Gilbert Burns at all. And I think this is the final stand for Gilbert. All right, he turns 40 next year in July, I believe it is. So this year he turns 39. And taking on a guy, Michael Morales, he's 24. All right, these two are at different places in life, MMA-wise. Gilbert Burns, remember when he was that young? And I don't know, this probably is going to be a change in the guard. We've seen a lot of guys making the jump. And it would suck to see Gilbert Burns lose. I can't lie, that would really hurt. But Michael Morales, probably going to be my prediction. Nonetheless, it doesn't change how much I respect both of these talents. And the last thing I wanted to touch on here, because we're going to touch on it later, but Aaron Pico has joined the UFC. He's a massive guy from Bellator and the PFL, and it was rumored he was going to take on Moser Evloff. Apparently that is false. That is not true. So I just wanted to kind of give some options on who Aaron Pico could come into the UFC and fight. First off, do want to say no one from UFC 314 I have him fighting against. I just don't see any of those guys having to fight a rising up-and-comer. I'm seeing Brian Ortega, maybe, if Brian Ortega chooses not to move to lightweight. Or what I really think is the option here, Arnold Allen, even Aljamain Sterling. But I really like the Arnold Allen matchup. I don't know if Aaron Pico is a grappler or a striker. I saw a couple highlights of his, but I was just wanted to throw that out there in terms of new UFC news. Aaron Pico is officially signed to the UFC, and if he does come in, I think him versus Arnold Allen would make a mighty good contest. But that's all we got for new UFC events announcements. We're going to let this sit for the next week. Not going to talk about it. And hopefully when we come back next week, which is going to be, I believe, like the 21st, we're going to have lots of UFC events to talk about. But another thing I did want to talk about is the NBA season has came to an end, and lo and behold, Timberwolves narrowly avoid having to play in the play-in. I mean, thankfully, the Warriors lost and the T-Wolves snuck in, so I'm very blessed for that. But NBA season has concluded, and we do know the final standings. Do want to just go through that real quick, and then we are going to make a little bracket here and just discuss who we think is going to win the NBA Finals. So first off, the East, Cavaliers, 64-18. They hold on. They had an impressive 34-7 home record this year. Good stuff from them. I'll tell you, boys, every time I do a sim on NBA 2K25, trying to just see what happened in the playoffs, Cavs never make it past round one. I don't know if the 2K sim does it like that for some reason, but that is irrelevant. I just found it hilarious. Cavaliers, they're the best team in the East this year. Congratulations to them. And number two, the reigning defending undisputed champs, the Boston Celtics. 61-21, end the year on a two-game winning streak. And back-to-back 60-win seasons, impressive. They're going to be tough to beat in the playoffs, let me tell you that. Coming in at number three, the Knicks, 51-31. Good year from them. The Cat trade benefited them more, unfortunately, for the Timberwolves. Pacers at four. Tyrese Halliburton leads a stellar true as they got 50 wins and 32 losses. So a 50-win year, not too bad. 20-20 on the road. does tell me something very interesting. The Bucks, 48-34, end on an 8-game winning streak. Massive for them. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard leading the fray. This Bucks team will be very interesting. I feel like they're going to be a tough team to play in the playoffs. And at number 6, the foul team locked in for the playoffs. The Pistons, 44-38. They did end on a 2-game losing streak, but don't look past that. Kate Cunningham has led this young gun-slinging team to the playoffs, and especially how bad they were the last few years. This is such a turnaround for the Pistons. Now, let's get into the 4 play-in teams. First off, Magic and Hawks. One of those two teams is going to be in the number 7 seed. Now, technically the Magic finished at the 7, but with this whole new play-in, you're giving a team like the Heat, who finished 37-45, a chance to make it in over the 41-41 Magic. That is certainly something very interesting. Now, this Magic team, they got a lot of young guns, got a lot of stars, but no one of really that higher level. No one that's really bringing in, like, they don't have a Cade Cunningham. They don't have a Tyrese Haliburton. They don't have a Giannis, a Jalen Brunson, a Jason Tatum, a Donovan Mitchell. They kind of just have a bunch of guys that just all kind of gel together. Taking on someone in the Hawks. You know, the Hawks, they got Dyson Daniels. They've got Okongwu. Trae Young is obviously a known name. And when it comes to that matchup, I'm going to go with the Magic. I think the Hawks always seem to be given an opportunity to make it, but I got the Hawks going in at the 7. Going to be honest, I don't think it matters. Celtics and Cavs are going to make it through to the next round. So if we want to just get our bracket over with right now, whether it's the Magic or the Hawks, the Celtics are getting past them. Now, as for who the Cavaliers could play, I mean, it could be the Bulls, could be the Heat. Winner of that will be taking on the loser of Magic and Hawks. I think if anyone, it's going to be the Heat making a run. Something just strikes me at that. But hey, if it's the Bulls, I won't be mad. If it's the Hawks, I won't be mad. Whoever wins that, though, Cavaliers are probably going to take them to school. If I had to actually make predictions, I'm going to switch what I was going to say. I'm going to go Bulls over Heat. I kind of forgot the Heat don't have Jimmy Butler anymore. He's on the Warriors. And when it comes to the Bulls and Hawks, I'm going to stick loyalty to the Bulls. So I'm actually going to send the Bulls to the playoffs to take on the Cavaliers. And hey, if the Bulls are going to upset, that would be fun. Now, as for the losers of the Eastern Conference, Raptors, 30-52, rough year. Nets, 26-56. I think they have potential next year, especially with the draft, to do good, but especially for this year, bad fall off. 76ers, 24-58. I mean, just the fact that they were never able to win anything when they had James Harden, Joel Embiid, Paul George. I mean, it is just utterly insane, and now I don't see where the future is going to go for the 76ers. Hornets at 14, 19-36, 7-game losing streak. Another year not getting into the 20-win category, and look, LaMelo Ball is A+. He is one of the best players in the league. They just don't have a full-built team here. So working with the draft, working with the offseason, Hornets really need to restructure their team. And I think they can elevate to play in, but I don't know if they can elevate to a top 6. Dare I even give them 7-8 next year. And last but not least, the 15-seed Wizards, 18-64. They managed to end the year on a win. You know, good for them. But, man, they suck. I don't know what to say of this team. I just want you guys to know that their roster is not good. Their roster is just not good. Their best player, I guess, technically is Jordan Poole. But, I mean, overall, there's just no gel. There's no rhythm. And the Wizards, I don't see next year getting better for them. So, sucks for them. They are officially the second worst team in the NBA. Because we actually do have another worst team in the Western Conference. Which we will jump over to right now before we get into more of our playoff predictions. I mean, Thunder, 68-14. 4-game win streak down the year. 35-6 at home. 32-8 on the year. Best team in the NBA. 4 games shy, mind you, 4 games shy of tying the, Chicago Bulls, the 95-96 for second best record of all time. 5 games shy of tying the 2015-2016 Warriors that went 73-9. So this Thunder team, super good, super stellar. As I look at the number 10-9 and loser of 7-8, no one is going to lose this Thunder team. In round one, that is. Thunder are winning a round one matchup guaranteed. Sweep, I don't know about past that. But Thunder, excellent year from them. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will win MVP, but we all know who the real MVP is. Winks, Joker. At number 2 seed, Rockets. 52-30, what? I mean, what a turnaround year for the Rockets. I am calling them the Washington Commanders of the NBA if we compare them to an NFL team. I think they had a really good year. Now, I don't know how the playoffs are going to go. I'm not actually going to give my prediction real quick because it does depend who wins that Warriors-Grizzlies matchup. as the Warriors finished at the 7 and Grizzlies at the 8, but Rockets this year, 50-win team, fantastic. Lakers at the 3, 50-32. I have zero respect for this Lakers team. They got Luka Doncic. That was unfair. Yeah, we're playing them in the playoffs. The Timberwolves are. Nuggets at the 4 and Clippers at the 5, both with a 50-32 record. Clippers end on an 8-game winning streak. Nuggets end on a 3-game winning streak since firing their coach. Interestingly enough, they will meet up in round 1. T-Wolves at the 6. I mean, honestly, it wasn't really going to be... I would have rather played the Rockets in round 1, but at the same time, I would never want to risk a play-in game losing. I mean, you have to think Grizzlies or Warriors are at the 7. They could potentially miss the playoffs, so... T-Wolves and Lakers, I actually like that. I really do like our odds there. I don't know how it's going to go, but T-Wolves at the 6. That's where we are. Warriors at 7, Grizzlies at 8. They both finished 48-34. It's a shame they could potentially not make the playoffs. Judging as we look at the 9-10, Kings 40-42, Mavericks 39-43, just charity. Play-in is honestly the charity of any league I've ever seen. I don't like the play-in idea. I don't know if it's going to stick around forever, but I don't know if it elevates much. Suns at the 11, the fact you have Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, and can't even make the playoffs, embarrassing. Trailblazers at 12, 36-46. They're working their way back since losing Damian Lillard, but still since the team just can't find the gel they need. Spurs at 13, 34-48. I mean, Victor Wembanyama is getting better. His team now has 34 wins. I think next year they're going to be a playoff team. I honestly think they're going to make some changes in the offseason, especially in the draft, and they're going to be even better next year. Pelicans at the 14, 21-61. Just atrocious. You got to blow everything up. If you're the Pelicans, blow the team up. Zion's got to go. Zion hasn't worked out there. Zion went from the next LeBron to a nobody. Let me just tell you that. You know, DeJounte Murray, he's a stud. He was better on the Spurs. Let's all be real. CJ McCollum can't really replicate his days in, we were just talking about them, Portland with the Trailblazers. Other than that, you know, you got decent players all around, but no one that's really going to be making that league-changing impact. Pelicans really got to make some changes. They end the year on a 7-game losing streak. And the worst team in the NBA, Jazz, 17-65. Don't know who's going to win the Cooper Flag Olympics, but honestly, if there's any team that deserves to get a Cooper Flag, it's the Jazz. They're bad. They're bad. I don't even know who their technical best player is. You got Colin Sexton, Lauri Markkanen, Walker Kessler, Jordan Clarkson, you know, Kyle Filipowski, one of the rookies this year. Isaiah Collier is kind of a dog. Bryce Sensabaugh, John Collins, you know, Johnny Juzang. You got a lot of heavy hitters. They just don't gel. They don't gel, and they don't have a star power to compete. So Jazz, 17 wins, 65 losses, worst team this season. Now, with that, let's get into our playoff predictions. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, I'm going to hold that thought. Let me talk about the final stat leaders for the season. I always find this interesting. So points per game, Shea finishes 32.7. In the second, Giannis Antetokounmpo 30.4 and just missing that 30-point range, Joker 29.8. Ant at 27.4, Tatum at 26.8, rounds off the top five. Very impressive stuff. Rebounds per game, Domantas Sabonis 13.9. Almost got into that 14 range. Joker, 12.8. I mean, come on. Number 3 in points per game. Number 2 in rebounds per game for the whole year. Cat also got 12.8. Ivica Zubac at 12.6. And Walker Kessler, 12.2. A lot of big men getting them boards. Assists per game. Trae Young, 11.6. Number 2 assists per game. Nikola Jokic, 10.3. I mean, come on. Come on, boy. Averaged a triple-double. Triple-double, not Wayne MVP. Tyrese Haliburton at 9.2, Kate Cunningham 9.1, and James Harden 8.7. Field goal percentage goes to Jared Allen, just barely beating out Jalen Duren with a 70.7 field goal percentage. It's all big men. It's all big men. Rudy Gobert 67.4, Vika Zubac 62.7, same percentage for Jakob Poeltl. Three pointers made on the year. Anthony Edwards gets 313, Malik Beasley in the 2 with 312. That's right, Ant is the regular season 3-point shooting king. Weird. How about that? Curry gets in with 304, and then you also get Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and Tyler Hero rounding it out, but it was pretty much Ant, Beasley, and Curry just about 8 three-pointers behind them. Three-point percentage, Seth Curry, 45.6. How about that? How about that? Look at the Currys. They know how to shoot. Zach LaVine on the Kings, 44.3, interestingly enough, and Ty Jerome, Virginia legend, at number 4 with a 43.9%. Then finally, what I want, actually we'll do two more. We'll do blocks and steals. So for blocks, I did just want to point out Walker Kessler, 2.4 on the worst team in the NBA, one of the worst teams of all time, I might add, 2.4 blocks. Amazing. Miles Turner, 2.0 as well. good stuff from them. And then steals per game, Dyson Daniels on the Hawks, 3 steals per game, crazy thing to average. The number 2 steals leader on the whole year, Nikola Jokic, 1.8. I just want to throw that out there. The fact that Joker is top 3, I just want to add that, top 3 in points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, and blocks per game, and is not winning MVP. It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. They're just giving Shea handouts, in my opinion. Now, on to our little playoff predictions right here. Okay, let's start with the East, because we already did the Cavs and Celtics, moving on. Knicks and Pistons. I like the Pistons. They're a fun team. I'm not betting against this Knicks team. Jalen Brunson is coming for blood. Cat is such a great addition. This Knicks team is advancing to the conference semifinals. Pacers Bucks. This is going to be interesting. I think you see that Giannis playoff experience. I'm going with the Bucks over the Pacers. No hate on Tyrese Haliburton. I think Giannis and Dame are going to come alive. They're going to do better than last year, and you're going to see the Bucks advance to the conference semifinals in the East. Now, for the West, Nuggets, Clippers, such a good series there, and they don't have Malone anymore, which I think is going to hurt, and the Clippers have momentum. This Clippers team just strikes me as a team to lose in the first round. So I am going to go with the Nuggets advancing to the semifinals, but this Nuggets team is really going to need to do something, because compared to the last 2 years, it's kind of gotten a bit messy. Now, mind you, the team hasn't changed that much, but we'll have to see what happens. Joker's coming for blood, and when we get that Joker-Shy matchup, it's going to be legendary. Before we talk about Lakers, T-Wolves, Rockets, and either the winner of the Warriors or Grizzlies, I just really want to pick the Warriors or Grizzlies, but something tells me that the Rockets are actually sneaky good, and I'm just sleeping on them. I mean, I don't really know too much about this team. I know Sengun is good. I know they got that Jalen Green guy I'm pretty sure is good, but other than that, Dylan Brooks, I think, is on that team. I don't know much about this Rockets team. If they were good in the regular season, but there's always that one upset. Always that one upset, and I'm actually going to go with the Warriors to advance, beating out the Grizzlies, then beating out the Rockets in a 6-game series. Warriors advance to the conference semifinals, and we don't even know that yet. All right, we're going to be talking about the play-in and stuff, but I don't even know if they're going to make it. I got them advancing. So if it's the Grizzlies winning, then I got to go Grizzlies over Rockets, which I also kind of like. I really do. Lakers and T-Wolves, and I'm biased, yo, in picking the T-Wolves to win this, but I'm going to be honest, guys. I think we can do it. I honestly think the Timberwolves can beat this Lakers team. The Lakers, I do think, have ego clashing. I think LeBron and Luka are two biggest superstars to be on the same team. Anthony Davis and LeBron, it worked. Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, it worked. But Luka and LeBron is just too big of a connection. You know, I just don't think it's going to work. I think this Timberwolves team is experienced from last year. I think we're going to get done. I think you're going to see the best playoff ant you have ever seen in your life. So give me the Timberwolves advancing to the Western Conference semifinals. I think they can do it. I truly believe they can do it, boys. I really do. And, you know, I really would have liked the Rockets matchup. I'd even favor them over the Nuggets or Clippers. But I think Lakers are a tough matchup. But I got T-Wolves in 7. T-Wolves in 7 advance to the semifinals. Give it to me all day. With that, the semifinals. First off, Cavaliers and Bucks. I really like this for an upset. I really like the Cavaliers getting an upset over the Bucks to advance to the conference finals, but I don't know. This Cavaliers team is number 1 for a reason. The fact they were able to beat out the Celtics says a lot about this team, and when it comes to playoffs, you know, Cavaliers got history. Remember those LeBron days? Remember even those years without LeBron, they think they made the playoffs? I don't know if that's true, but I'm going to go with the number 1 seeded Cavs to make it to the conference semifinals in what should be a very competitive series. But I'm going to be honest, if the Cavs don't make it, I'm not too surprised. But nonetheless, I'm not big against the number 1 team. Knicks and Celtics, this is one of my favorite series. As I look at all the potential series we're probably going to get throughout all the playoffs, this one is my favorite. I love this so much. It's so tricky to pick. It really is tricky to pick, but if the Celtics can get past this Knicks team, they will probably advance to the finals. They probably will, and some about them, they had a really good regular season. You know, Celtics got to 60 wins. Knicks, I just think, are going to fall into that Buffalo Bills category where they just can't get past that one team. And the one team in this case is going to be the Celtics, who, yes, I am comparing to the Chiefs. Give me the Celtics to advance to the conference finals. Now, this is where we're getting crazy. Thunder and Nuggets. This is painful to me. This is painful because this is a really close series. I mean, this is going to be one of the best series you could get in the West. And if I just had to choose, something's telling me the Nuggets could maybe do it, but I'm going to go with the Thunder here to advance. And why the Thunder, you may ask? I think Joker is going to run into the scenario where the Thunder is just getting outrageous calls, and no matter what he does, no matter how many triple-doubles he gets, Thunder are going to advance. And I'm going to give the Thunder the benefit of the doubt with a 68-14 record. Guys, this is one of the best teams in the NBA history. All right, this team should be in 2K from now on. It's a historic team. I'm sending them to the conference finals. T-Wolves beat the Warriors. T-Wolves beat the Grizzlies. Timberwolves are advancing to the conference finals. I kid you not, I'm not even trying to be biased. I truly believe the Timberwolves can return to the conference finals and give out a legendary performance. Give it to me. Now, with that, we do get into our conference finals. Cavs and Celtics, Thunder and Timberwolves are my final four teams. And when it comes to Cavs and Celtics, like I said, Celtics are just too appetizing to not pick up. I think they are the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they're going to advance again. That's just what I think is going down. As for Thunder and Timberwolves, I think Ant's going to have a breakout performance. I think when Jordan led the Bulls, you know, Jordan brought the Bulls to the playoffs for a few times, okay? But then 1990 and 91 hit, and that first chipper hit. That's what's happening with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Give it in seven. The Timberwolves beat the Thunder, and the place is going to go crazy. Absolutely. With that, Timberwolves and Celtics, a 2-6 seed in the conference finals. I absolutely love it. Not the conference finals, the NBA finals, for goodness sakes. T-Wolves, Celtics, look. All right, guys, we all remember that the Celtics are the Chiefs, okay? The Chiefs also didn't start their dynasty until they had officially lost their second Super Bowl. That is right. As we all know, the Chiefs lost to the Buccaneers. And just like the Buccaneers had Tom Brady, the Timberwolves have Anthony freaking Edwards, okay? And Ant Edwards is going to go in and beat the Celtics in a five-game series in shocking format. Give me the Timberwolves over the Celtics all freaking day. I'm pumped. I think this is going to be fantastic. I got the Timberwolves winning the NBA championship. Call me biased. Call it what you will. But I am not going against my Minnesota Timberwolves. It's due. This team is so good. I'm so happy for them. And they should have finished with the fourth seed, in my opinion. I don't know what happened. But Timberwolves beating the Celtics in the NBA Finals. How did we get here? I don't know. But nonetheless, it's freaking awesome. So, guys, that's your rundown on the NBA. We'll probably check back in once the play-ins are done and once the first few games have happened, but it's probably going to be a week-by-week check-in. I think maybe next episode I talk about the NHL as they wrap up their season, but as for the NBA, Shea's MVP, no idea who wins any other awards, and the Timberwolves are going to win the NBA Finals. Will they? I don't know, but nonetheless, I think they are. I'll tell you what else I think I are, if we can use grammar incorrectly there. I think that UFC 314 was fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, it did not disappoint. We also did fantastic odd predictions. We started the card 6-0. At one point, we were 9-1. We end 10-3. Let's talk about all the fights because it was action-packed from the get-go. Now, most times when we kick off these UFC cards, we get a boring women's fight. But the ladies were showing up today with the intent to kill as Nora Cannoli starts off the card with a round two rear naked choke of Haley Cohen. This is only Nora Cannoli's second career submission, and it was fantastic to see. Truly, I felt really good for her. Massive win for her. She was ranked 13, and when you're getting a finish in the women's bantamweight division, you gotta get a little boost, in my opinion, all right? But round one didn't start too good for her. Didn't start too good. Haley Cohen landed one takedown and had 4 minutes and 24 seconds of control time. And I was kind of like, geez, here we go, another boring fight. And then round two, she shoots for a takedown. Nora reverses it, takes her back, and submits her. It was fantastic to see. I mean, honestly, super happy for Nora Cannoli. She's now 3-1 in the UFC and gets her second career finish. And make that 8 finishes and 9 wins. Love to see that. Love to see that for Nora Cannoli. Haley Cohen, I mean, tough going. Tough going. 7-4 now. 2-fight losing streak in the UFC. Actually, 0-2 in the UFC. I don't know if I'd bring her back. I don't know if I'd bring her back in all honesty, but Nora Cannoli, I'm bringing her back. And look, ranked number 13, getting a finish. Give her a top 10 opponent. Give her Mayra Bueno Silva. Give her Irene Aldana. Give her Yana Santos, for goodness sakes. You know, the women's bantamweight division is so easy to break into. If I'm Nora Cannoli, I'm getting a big opportunity after this one, but happy to see it. For Ailey Cohen, you know, there's always going to be losers of women's man-to-man matchups coming up. You know, we discussed Chelsea Chandler and Jocelyn Edwards. Loser of that could be an option for Ailey Cohen, but honestly, this was just a run-of-the-mill fight. Glad it ended with a finish in round number two, and I was happy that it was from the chick I picked. So Nora Cannoli, great win for you. I want you to get a top 10 opponent, maybe even the number 10 opponent in the women's man-to-man division, I should better say, in your next fight. So good for 35 years old from France. Maybe we can get her on that French card, presumably taking place in September. After that, things really got going, boys. Things really got going. And girls, we got girls listeners. As Marco Tulio, you know, I was never in doubt that Marco Tulio was going to beat Trayshawn Gore, but how it happened. I mean, insane. Final stats from this. Two knockdowns, 127 significant strikes to 17, 140 total strikes to 17. Domination from Marco Tulio. In round number one, a knockdown, 77 significant strikes at 13. It was like Marco Tulio had aim assist on, if we're talking video games. It's like he was cheating. His fist would not stop colliding with Trayshawn Gore's face. It was brutal. It was brilliant. The kicks, the body shots, it was a phenomenal. Round two, 50 significant strikes to 4. It wasn't even close. I mean, Marco Tulio, who is this guy? Who is this guy? 10 fight win streak now. Make it 10 knockouts and 11 of his 14 wins are by finish. He's 2-0 in the UFC. Both of them knockouts. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, dude is off to a hot start in the men's middleweight division. Two fights in 2025. Both of them fantastic knockouts. Marco Tulio, massive fan now. Massive fan of Marco Tulio. It's not that I wasn't taking him serious, but I was kind of like, you know, Tulio, Trayshawn Gore, I'm obviously going to pick Tulio, not doubting him, but nonetheless, the fashion he did it in, phenomenal. And people are saying the stoppage was a bit early. Look, it's not early. It's not early. Yes, Trayshawn was getting clipped and he started to grab onto his legs to stand up, but he had over 110 more significant strikes than him. He had already dropped him a time before. This was not a bad stoppage. There's one earlier, which people were a bit questionable about. You know, some people were questioning the stoppages on tonight's card, but this was not a bad stoppage. Not in the slightest. And Marco Tulio, great win here. Love to see it. Now, what's next for him? I'm actually going to tell you when we get to our next middleweight matchup we have. That's what I want next for Marco Tulio. And as for Trayshawn Gore, you know, this is tough. Second time you've been knocked out in your career. It's not ideal. Not ideal in the slightest. He's 2-3 in the UFC now. So next fight's make or break. Depending if the next person I also talk about gets another UFC fight, I might match make them. But in terms of middleweight division, there's always going to be fighters that need a boost up in who they're fighting. Trayshawn Gore, you will probably get an opponent of lesser class or even higher class. I don't know, in terms of prospects. Good win for Marco Tulio. He's in for a big year. Now, next up, flyweight division. And this is the perfect example of a fight where, you know, some people get mad when grapplers beat strikers. This is where a striker beats a grappler, as Suma Darji beats Mitra Pozo by split decisions. And the one thing about this fight, by the way, pick Suma Darji, happy for him. Great win for the Tbilisian Eagle. He's now 17-7, snaps a three-fight losing streak. Is, you know, he outstruck him 45-9. Significantly, 78-13. Mitra Pozo went 6 of 19 on takedown. So Suma Darji defended 13. Only 4 minutes and 18 seconds. Okay, minute in round one, minute 15 in round two, just under 2 minutes in round number three. That's not going to do it. That's not going to do it. And by the way, the outstriking total, round one, 11-5, round two, 14-2, and round three, 20-2. So Mitch Raposo was pulling off a Torrance Finney performance, and the judges weren't having it. So Troy Winspack had it 29-28. Who did he score for? He scored for Suma Darji. Christopher Edgehill, 29-28. And Junichiro Camijo, of course, Junichiro Camijo scores it for Mitch Raposo. So, Mitch, don't really feel too bad for you here. You know, two fights he's lost now by split decision. 0-2 now in the UFC. Also lost in David's Contender Series. He's not coming back. Mitch Raposo, go to the independent scene, stack up some wins. You know, you're only 26 years old. Come back in 3 to 4 years when you're a champion. And by the way, his record right now is 9-3. If he could go to the independent scene, come back 17-18-3, I think he could be talking about getting another fight. But Suma Darji, man, he ain't no spring chicken. I mean, I won't say that. You know, Suma Darji is, actually, he's 29. These Chinese guys, they always have so many fights. But he's finally almost evened out. Actually, he is 4-4 in the UFC. Good stuff for Sumedarji. So flyweight division, you're going to be getting some fun fights in the future. You know, you got Tagirl and Bekoff and Kai Uchigochi or Gucci fighting. Loser of that versus Sumedarji? Hey, why not? We talked about it. We're going to make it happen. After that, the final early prelim matchup, we had another middleweight fight, and it was Michael Kajacek versus Cedric DUI Dumas. That's my nickname for it. That's right. Cedric Dumas has so many arrests. He's an absolute criminal. And watching Michael win was so satisfied. So satisfied. Michael Kajacek, 15th career knockout. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And now 16 of his 20 wins by finish. Love to see it. This snaps a 3-fight losing streak, and it's such a feel-good moment. Such a feel-good moment for Michael Kajacek. And he just had the edge. 34 significant strikes of three. This fight lasted 2 minutes, 49 seconds. It was just clear. Michael was so locked in. I've never seen Michael Kajacek in better than this in the UFC so far. This was truly the best Michael Kajacek we've ever seen. He was locked in on Dumas. Finally, he dropped him. The follow-up punches were so vicious. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Mark Goddard could have stepped in a bit earlier, but it was kind of satisfying to see that criminal get his face patched in. So Michael Kajacek, excellent win. Fantastic to see. As for Dumas, look, he's gone win, loss, two wins, one loss, one win, one loss. I think him versus Trayshawn Gore is the perfect fight to see who remains in the UFC. And as for what's next, look, Michael got a big win, big knockout right there. And I think a guy like Marco Tullio is perfect next for him, okay? Tullio, he's not going to the rankings just yet. No. Slow your roll. But matchmaking both of these winners and losers of those fights, I think works out perfectly. That way you can truly see if Ole Kajacek is back, taking on an actual up-and-comer, not Cedric Dumas, who was coming off a pitiful performance last time out, but someone in Marco Tullio who just battered Trayshawn Gore. I love that. So Ole Kajacek, such a feel-good win for you. And hey, another knockout added to the total. The early prelims were fantastic. Only doozy was Sumedarji and Richard Pozzo. Other than that, great fights all around. With that, we got into, as we technically quoted, the regular prelims, which is, they're all the prelims, guys. That's, for any casuals, it's all the prelims. But they sometimes classify on the pay-per-view card early prelims, regular prelims. I think it has to do with TV or ESPN. I don't know. But we got Darren Elkins versus Julian Arosa. And I am so glad that Darren Elkins at plus 280 didn't tempt me, because Julian Arosa went out there and just flatlined him. I mean, this was a tough watch. This was a tough watch. And by the way, 31 wins in the career of Julian Arosa. He now has 26 finishes and just got his 12th career knockout. Fantastic. And make it 3 straight wins, 3 straight round one finishes. Julian Arosa is on a roll. As for Darren Elkins, I mean, you just saw a 40-year-old in there getting beat up, and the finishing sequence was just brutal. I mean, Elkins didn't even get knocked down. He fell. He went 1 of 7 on takedowns, and just nothing was phasing Arosa, and finally he was getting clipped, and it was a bad finish. It was a bad finish. Like, it legit looked like his brain was kind of shutting off at the end. I think Darren Elkins needs to retire. All right, they're not going to give you anyone easier than Julian Arosa to fight. And, you know, I would have loved to see him end his career with that fight in the night win over Daniel Pineda, but he wanted to come back. He probably will come back. So for Elkins, I'm only saying retirement. You know, his nickname's The Damage for a reason. He's taken a lot of damage. I don't want to see him back in the octagon anytime soon. Let's retire Darren and call it a career. As for Julian Arosa, I mean, I don't know what to do with Julian. I'm going to be honest. I mean, he's on a 3-fight win streak, finished all of them in round one. There's just no one really in the ranked featherweight rankings he could fight. I mean, we could give him Calvin Kattar, maybe. You know, Bryce Mitchell could be an option. I think Yusuf Zalal could be another option. But there's always someone we're going to mention in just a tad later up in the card in John Woodson, who lost. You could even have him fight Dan Ige. You know, there's a lot of options for Julian Arosa. And whether he fights an up-and-comer, whether he fights another unranked middleweight like a Pat Sabatini, like a Hakeem Dawodo, guys like that, or whether he fights someone in the rankings, you know, I will not be surprised. But for where he's at in his career, you know, this guy was getting knocked out by Alex Caceres, and now he's out there knocking out Darren Elkins. Feel good for him. Great stuff, Julian. Happy for you. Next up, Chase Hooper, Jim Miller. Kind of sad. You know, I didn't pick Jim Miller. Glad I picked Chase Hooper. I mean, he was a heavy favorite for a reason. But nonetheless, I actually missed this fight. And by the looks of it, it was just grappling from Chase Hooper. I mean, 8 of 14 on takedowns, 10 minutes of control time. Oh my gosh, just a whole lot of grappling. And 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. It looks like Jim might have won round one. I'm going to assume, but rounds two and especially three went to Chase Hooper. 4 minutes of control time in both those rounds. And round one, you know, Jim was throwing up some submission attempts, but when it got to round three, Chase had a nasty leg lock knocked in. I mean, it was bad. And, you know, it's just levels to this. Chase Hooper, 5-fight win streak, 5-0 at lightweight. It's tough to justify giving him someone like in the rankings, but Grant Dawson is ranked number 14. I think that's a phenomenal matchup. In my opinion, Grant Dawson is a perfect matchup for these two. Now, there's also the loser of Benoit Saint-Denis and Joel Alvarez, but it's going to be tough to break Chase Hooper in. And Chase Hooper said something really weird on the mic afterwards. He was like, yeah, you know, I was gooning too much this camp. You know, my wrists hurt. And I think everyone was like, did I just hear Mike? Did he just say gooning? Chase Hooper, I mean, we forget, like, Chase Hooper is, how old is he? Where is he? Yeah, he's 25. This guy's 3 years older than me. He's still kind of from the same generation I was, but another impressive performance, getting it done. Chase Hooper over Jim Miller wasn't that big of a shocker. For Jimmy Boy, I mean, he always goes win-loss. They're always going to find someone for Jim Miller to fight, and I just think the one thing is, when will Jim Miller retire? We never know, but 41 years old, didn't take too much damage in this fight. He'll be back. I think we might be going to New Jersey in June. I don't know if Jim can make that quick of a turnaround, but hey, he's from New Jersey, from Sparta. Maybe he'll come back. I don't know. Jim Miller, he's ageless. He's wonderful. He'll return. With that, we got into our second-to-last prelim. And our second-to-last prelim would surprise you, as it was the number one-ranked woman strawweight in the world taking on the number three-ranked. And that's right, it's on the prelims. But for good reason, Yan Cheon and Virta Jandido, but killed my predictions. I was a stellar 7-0. I was 6-0. 6-0 up to this point. And then Yan Cheon and Virna Jandidoba happened. And it was just painful to watch. Painful to watch as Yan Cheon legit just got out grappled every round. That's all that happened. You know, outstruck her 17-11. Total strikes. Virna was throwing more. 3 of 11 on takedowns. 10 minutes of control time. 3 minutes round one, 4:15 in round two, and 2:42. In round number three. Just, I mean, grappled her every single fight. And by the way, Vera didn't even land significant strikes in round number two. So Jandidoba has strung together a nice little win streak. 5-fight win streak. I mean, dominated Yan Cheon, and she's getting the next title shot, but I don't give her much of a chance against Zhang Weili. Because if Zhang Weili can defend anyone's takedowns, it's then game over on the feet. Virna Jandidoba has zero feet game, whatever you want to call it. Stand-up. She has zero stand-up. So, sucks to see Yan Cheon losing, but I don't really know. We'll see what's next. Virna's getting a title shot. This fight was boring, and especially watching Yan Cheon lose was really painful for me. So, Yan Cheon, who will I matchmake her with? I don't really know. Mackenzie Dern, I think, could be a fun fight. Maybe run up a little Dern Cheon. And for Virna Jandidoba, yeah, give her a title shot. Zhang Weili needs someone to fight, for goodness sake. I mean, she keeps running through everyone. I mean, goodness me, she's beaten the number one, number two, number four, and number five women in the UFC. She's beaten the top five. Virna Jandidoba, the only one left. She'll move up to the number one spot in the rankings, and she'll be greeted with a title shot. And hopefully a freaking Chinese fist to the face from Zhang Weili, who I love very much so. With that, final prelim of the evening, Dan Ige, Sean Woodson. And as a Dan Ige supporter, this felt so nice. Not even a hater of Sean Woodson, gotta be honest, but Dan Ige coming in smaller, shorter, literally had nothing going for him. He was on a losing streak. Sean Woodson's on a winning streak. And the fight gets going. 26-9 outstruck in round one. It was embarrassing. Now, mind you, not too much damage, but outstruck. Round two, Woodson outstrikes him 18-15. Dan Ige can't even land a takedown. It was looking rough. It was looking real rough. I was a little nervous. And then round three, the magic round of Dan Ige. Sean couldn't even last a minute 15 as Ige gets him out of there in a minute 12. I mean, fantastic work. Now, Ige just kind of hit the flow state. It's all the way I can really describe it is round three came around and it was like, okay, it's go time. I could be down. And by the way, the judges had it 2-0 for Ige in round three. Verdict had it split 1-1. So this was a pivotal round. Nonetheless, it was a 50-50 fight. And Ige just came alive. And he was clipping Sean. He was hitting him all over. And Sean was wobbling. Like, Sean was going off his back. Ige wasn't pulling the trigger enough, which I didn't like. And then obviously the finishing sequence turned into Woodson shooting for a takedown, failing, and he was just getting bashed on the head, and the ref saying, fight back, fight back, fight back, fight back. I'm talking hammer fists, little mini uppercuts right to the face, and finally, Andrew Glenn, who I'd never seen before, called it off right as Woodson kind of got to his feet, so people were calling it a bad stoppage, but, I mean, Ige was going to win, Not, regardless, I just think, you know, better to have it this way than have the other way. So, Dan Ige back in the win column. I love to see it. 19-9, man. 19-9 record, and the streak lives. Dan Ige only loses to ranked opposition, anyone unranked. He not only wins, but he knocks frickin' out. I mean, this is a streak now, boys. We've now had Sean Woodson, Andre Feely, Nate Landwehr, David Jackson, Gavin Tucker. I mean, it's a streak right now. Dan Ige, 50K, didn't get the 50K performance bonus, but still keeps that 50K nickname. As for Sean Woodson, oh, do kind of feel bad for him. 6-fight win streak snap. This is now the second loss he suffered, second defeat by finish. And I don't know, he's in the similar boat as Julian Arosa. He'll either fight an up-and-comer, he'll fight someone coming just out of the rankings. You know, I think a fun fight, Giga Chikadze and David Onama are fighting. Someone's going to lose that matchup. I think Sean Woodson should fight the win, the loser of whoever loses between those two. I think you get what I'm saying. But Sean Woodson, still tall for the featherweight division. You know, he'll be back, but Dan Ige sticking around. I guess I do got to say what's next for Dan. He's ranked number 15. I'd put him past Calvin Kattar. You know, Jean Silva's going to debut at number 13 in the rankings. If I'm Ige, I'm probably getting a ranked opponent next, so who could it be? Maybe Aljamain Sterling? I don't know. I really don't know what to do with Dan Ige. Dan, you just sit by, you sit pretty, and we'll find someone for you to fight, because hopefully it's not Gene Silva. I really hope it's not Gene Silva. With that, ladies and gentlemen, the main card kicked off, and let me just tell you, this is one of the most perfect main cards you can get. Only one doozy. Only one doozy. 4 to 5 of these were fantastic. And we also recreated with the first fight the Conor McGregor Jose Aldo knockout. As Dominic the Devastator Reyes, you can officially say it, he's back. Dominic Reyes is back, and he is now one fight away from a freaking title shot. Dominic Reyes gets his 10th career knockout as he gets Nikita Krylov out of there in under 3 minutes. Phenomenal work for the Devastator. Make it a 12-4 professional, 15-4 professional record now. 3 straight wins, 3 straight knockouts. This dude's back. He is so freaking back. And I'll just tell you from this one, Nikita Krylov, this is what happens when you take over 2 years off. This is legit what happens, because he comes back, he was a bit overzealous, and literally, he was leaning forward, literally looking just like how Jose Aldo went to punch McGregor, and Reyes comes, cranks back that left, and boom, clips him, down he goes, took about one, maybe two follow-up punches, but he was already out of there. Dominic Reyes getting the win, and oh my goodness, I was going ballistic. It was so freaking good. He's going to go from number 11 in the rankings to number 8. Fantastic to see. As for Nikita, what to do with him? I don't know. You got Azmet Mirzakhanov, you got Bogdan Guskov. If Zhang Mingyang beats Anthony Smith, you know, he's fighting another up-and-comer. But for Dominic Reyes, who should he fight? None other than the man he called out, Alexander Rakic. It's the perfect fight. He'll be ranked 8. Rakic is 6. It works out so beautifully. You can't write it any better. Give Dominic Reyes a fight against Rakic, and if he wins that, give him the freaking title shot. I mean, this career revitalization of Dominic Reyes is so satisfying. 35 years old. 35 years old right now. At 30 years old, right after he lost to John Jones, got knocked out by Jan Blachowicz, then went down this awful spiral. You know, I'm sure he was questioning life, you know, from going 12-0 to 12-4. I mean, it was embarrassing, but now he's back. 3 straight wins, 3 straight knockouts, and a title eliminator next. Dominic Reyes, you are so back. And then we had Gene Silva, Bryce Mitchell. It was as good as advertised. Okay, I can't lie. It was as good as advertised. Just from the get-go, you felt the animosity, you felt the intensity, and you could just tell that Bryce Mitchell knew that Gene Silva was a threat. You know, Bryce Mitchell had a great press conference. He truly went in there with no fear, but right from the get-go, you could just kind of tell Gene Silva fights a different kind of fight. Gene Silva is a freaking animal. And yeah, he gets the round 2 guillotine choke, nasty fashion. I mean, it was brutal. It was brutal. Gene Silva, just pure domination. I mean, I think he is 5-0 in the UFC. 5 knockouts, and you know what? Actually, this is not a knockout as he got a submission, but you know, 15-fight win streak now for him. 15 of his 16 wins are by finish. This dude's scary. This dude's super scary. What even is his official win streak? 13 straight wins? He's insane. He's freaking insane. So round 1, I mean, Bryce Mitchell outlanding Gene Silva, was hitting the kicks, was hitting everything, was doing pretty good, landed a takedown, but Gene Silva kind of just seemed to be doing better. I don't know, there's something about it, like, you know, he wasn't really affected by a thing, but Bryce Mitchell outstruck him and outgrappled him. Then round two came, and you could just tell Gene Silva had found his element. He's mocking him. Bryce goes 0 of 11 on takedowns, just couldn't get anything. Gene Silva was toying with him. He knocked him down, and finally, he got a hold of his neck. By the way, threw up three different submission attempts. Third one, super nasty. Bryce went until he couldn't go anymore. Right as he's about to tap, he passes out. Phenomenal work from Gene Silva. As for Bryce, I kind of feel for Bryce Mitchell, you know, getting a lot more hate than he deserves, but, you know, win-loss in his last five fights, he's going to need a big one next up. So, similar to Sean Woodson, Julian Arosa, you know, what to do with Bryce, he's going to fight an up-and-comer. Could be anyone. I think Pat Sabatini is a fun option. Two great grapplers who can also strike when they need to. I think that's what you do next. Now for Gene Silva, because Gene Silva is just, you know, first it was Kyle Barallo, then it was Carlos Prates, and now Gene Silva has found the rankings. He is coming for the throne, and what to do next with him? I don't freaking know. He's going to be ranked number 13. You know, Yusuf Zalal, Giga Chikadze, two guys right in the middle there. Josh Emmett is a perfect fight. Josh Emmett is a really perfect fight. He was also calling out Diego Lopez. He was calling out Yair Rodriguez. I think you can do whatever you want with Gene Silva. The Josh Emmett fight kind of is like right there for the pickings. I think you've got to make that. But Gene Silva, I mean, love him or hate him, he's an entertaining fighter to watch. And I personally love him. I don't know. Some about him, it's just, I like him. After that, we had only our, I would say, third L, maybe fourth L of the night, and that was Yair Rodriguez versus Patricio Pitbull, because Pitbull is clearly just not as hungry as he used to be. You know, he in this little promo he cut before, and he was saying, I'm the most motivated fighter in the entire world, and he pitched a dud against Yair Rodriguez. I mean, Yair toyed with him the entire fight, and, you know, the weird thing is despite getting knocked down, despite getting outstruck 70-17 significantly, 97-23 overall, you know, losing all three rounds on every judge's scorecard, round three should have been a 10-8, honestly, he just didn't even take that much damage. It just looked like he was just there to be there, like to say, hey, I fought in the UFC. That's honestly how it felt, and Nair capitalized on it, did what he had to do. He's going to be remained ranked number five. I mean, the tail of this fight, I mean, listen to this. 11-4 outstruck him in round one. Awful round one. So boring. Round two, Yair, 21-8. Kind of started lighting up more. And then round three, all Yair, 38-5. Knocked him down. It was the Yair show, baby. Yair Rodriguez getting it done. Good for him. Couldn't get the finish, but I wouldn't knock him too much. I mean, he's 21-6 now. Back in the win column in 2 years. Good for him. And then Yair kind of lost everyone's side as he started calling for a title shot. Like, legit, all he was asking for was a title shot. I mean, does Yair live on the same earth as us? Does Yair watch the same UFC as us? Because I hope he knows he's not getting the next title shot, and he has at least one more fight. I mean, he could win his next fight, but Yair Rodriguez is not getting the next title shot. So, Yair, what to do with you? I mean, we'll mention him, but Diego Lopez could be an option. I would personally love Aaron Pico, Yair Rodriguez, but they aren't going to give him two options like that. So, Yair versus Diego Lopez, probably the fight to make right there, or else you do Yair versus Leron Murphy, but it kind of feels weird to have him fight down again. I don't know, just not a title shot. No title shot right there. As for Pitbull, I mean, I don't know what to do with this guy. He's 37, showed no killer instinct. I mean, there's a couple times he landed a good punch. That's it. I don't know if we reward him with a ranked opponent. I mean, but if we want to find someone who needs a bounce back fight, how about Calvin Kattar? Calvin Kattar versus Pitbull, I think, is a perfect matchup right there. Maybe even Aljamain Sterling. I don't know. But Pitbull, will he come back? Will he stay? We have another 8 months to find out for this year. But that was an L. We'll leave it there. The following was just cinema. I mean, you know, when I saw, we'll start with the co-main event, obviously, but when I saw Paddy Pimblett, Michael Chandler, I was worried. I was like, you know, Paddy, I mean, have we seen his chin? Has he ever been hit by someone like Chandler? I mean, the grappling, Chandler's an All-American grappler, and on the prediction show, I was flip-flopping. And then finally, I was kind of like, you know what? I have a Paddy Pimblett shirt. I've picked Paddy in all six of his UFC wins. I'm not stopping now. All right. And I picked Paddy Pimblett, and I confidently rooted for him. And from the get-go, just domination. I mean, imagine getting 5 rounds and you don't even need the full 3, as Paddy Pimblett not just finishes Michael Chandler, but TKOs him in round number 3. I mean, he brutalized him. Paddy Pimblett is an absolute killer. Insane. This is his 6th career knockout. 17th career finish. Make it 9 overall wins. Make him 7-0 in the UFC. He's real deal. He's the real deal. And Paddy Pimblett is going to go from being ranked number 12 to being ranked number 7 in the world. And he's got a top 5 title eliminator matchup next. I mean, it was insane. Paddy utterly destroyed him. Totals from the fight, 80 significant strikes to 11. Michael Chandler only landed 11. Total strikes, 121-20. Mind-blowing. Chandler, 4 of 7 on takedowns, 2 minutes, 44 seconds. Paddy, 1 of 2, 4 minutes, 41 seconds. Just domination. And then round 3, Paddy landed the takedown, brutalized him, 30 significant strikes to 1. Chandler was beat after round number 1. Game over. Game over, if you ask me. Paddy, love him to death. Amazing work. And now, what's next? What's next? You go out there and you beat Michael freaking Chandler better than Charles Oliveira beat him. Better than Dustin Poirier beat him. Better than Justin Gaethje beat him, for goodness sakes. I mean, Paddy made him look like a bum. And you know, you can bring up, oh, Michael Chandler's 38, Paddy Pimblett's 30. So what? It's still Michael freaking Chandler. So actually, we'll do Chandler first. You know, Chandler, he's probably going to get booted down. He'll be ranked 8, 9, 10. You know, people are saying he should fight unranked opposition. But I think, you know, Chandler's still a big name. Chandler will stay in the UFC despite being, what is he, 1-5 in his last 6. I'm seeing Renato Moicano is a great name. I'm seeing maybe the winner of Benoit Saint-Denis and Joel Alvarez. I'm maybe even seeing Dan Hooker rematching him if Dan Hooker loses his next fight. So don't count out Michael Chandler. He's going to not fight a bum, but, you know, waiting for McGregor kind of killed him. You could still do McGregor versus Chandler. I can't lie. Honestly, McGregor would be the favorite in that one. Now, as for Paddy, this is where it gets weird. He's going to be ranked number 7 minimum. Gotta be. You gotta rank him at number 7. And he can even get booted up to number 6 past Dan Hooker, but he's getting a top 5 guy. He's getting a top 5 guy, and he called out Armin Tsarukian, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje. Even threw in Poirier, but I think even he knows he's not fighting Poirier. So you got Armin, Charles, and Gaethje. There's a weird mix going on at lightweight. There's a really weird mix, so we have to try and matchmake here. So Poirier is retiring. Poirier is retiring. Some are telling me it's going to be Max Holloway. Some are telling me it could be other people. But Max Holloway at 4, doesn't Poirier at 5. We're cutting them. Dan Hooker at 6. I think he's fighting maybe the oddball out of those two. I don't know. Whoever doesn't fight one another. But I'm not seeing Dan Hooker at 6. Justin Gaethje at 3, I think, is the front runner. I think Justin Gaethje at 3 is a front runner. Oliveira is amazing. But I'm just going to say but. There is word you may be getting Charles Oliveira versus Ito Piura for the vacant lightweight championship because Islam may move up to take on Jack Del Maddalena if he beats Bilal Muhammad. That may be happening. There's also Armin Tsarukian. I really love that fight too for Paddy. I honestly like that a bit more than Justin Gaethje fight, but in terms of who deserves a title shot, I think Armin still deserves it, no matter nonetheless. So Justin Gaethje at number 3, he wants to fight for a title. He's only coming off of one solid win we could give him it. As for Paddy, he continues to move up the rankings. There's your fight right there. Gaethje versus Paddy. That's honestly pay-per-view level quality. So making another co-main event of a pay-per-view, it's going to be phenomenal. I'm excited for it. And then after that, ladies and gentlemen, what some may say is the fight of the year. You know, I'm still going to put it at 2. You know, I still remember Umar Mirov for how amazing it was, but Volkanovski Lopez, fight of the night. It was amazing. It was fantastic. It was worth all the time watching it. And Volkanovski is a 2-time featherweight champion. Good for him, honestly. Great for Volkanovski. Feel good moment for him. You know, someone had to lose, and the fashion that Diego Lopez lost him, I wasn't too mad about. Now, the one thing I do want to say about this was a weird fight to watch. Because when we look at the stats, 158 significant strikes to 63, Volk really outstruck him. But also, Volk went 1 of 11 on takedowns. So, I mean, I was watching. I was biased, but legit watch it live. 48-47 Lopez was my scorecard. And yet, as I look back, you know, I guess he was outstruck every single round, so I can't really give him a round. But in terms of how the fight went, you know, Volkanovski was just landing more significant strikes, but the power was with Lopez. I mean, Lopez dropped him at round 2. It was amazing. But what you really saw live in this fight was Volk going backwards. I will say that was the one thing I remember most. I think I was watching my buddies, like, they're like, dude, Volk's landing more, but he keeps retreating. And hey, it paid off. Volkanovski won. I saw a lot of people saying this should have been a 50-45, 49-46 at minimum, but I think 48-47 worked out perfectly. Volkanovski wins. Volkanovski is your two-time champion, and you know what? Good for him. Good for him. He beats the 35-plus curse for anyone under the lightweight division not winning the belt past the age of 35, as he is 36. He kind of redeems the EA Sports cover curse, and I think he beat another curse of some kind. Volkanovski, oh, the Drake curse as well. Volkanovski breaking all the curses. Gotta love him. Gotta love him, man. But what's next? I mean, you heard the man. You heard the man. He said it clear as day. Give me Mosravlov. Mosravlov, 19-0, undefeated, ranked number 4 in the world. It's time. It's time for Mosravlov to get that shot, and son of a gun, he's earned it. So Mosravlov versus Volk, maybe in Australia. If we could do Australia in August or maybe even October, that'd be awesome. So I think that's what's next for you. Mosravlov title shot. Love to see it. Now, as for Diego Lopez, don't hang your head low, my boy, because Diego Lopez took it to Volkanovski better than Max Holloway ever did. I'll tell you freaking that. So Lopez going to be staying ranked at number 3. Might even get boosted up to 2, oddly enough, that Volkanovski is going to be moving up the champion spot. So Lopez will be ranked number 2. But I think him versus Jair, winner gets another title shot. I think everyone's talking about it. Everyone's saying that's what you should do next. And honestly, I agree. I agree. I think that's a perfect little thing to do right there, because Jair wants a title shot. Seems like the UFC wants to give him one. And as for Lopez, that's a type of fight where you want to see an immediate rematch, and the winner of Lopez Jair taking on the winner of Mosfar and Volkanovski. Fantastic. Fantastic. So that's what you do there. But UFC 314 is now atop the best pay-per-view rankings. And in terms of main event, this was your best pay-per-view main event of the year. You could even argue this was the best main event of the year. UFC 314. They made the card good, and the card was good. This is something to learn from UFC when you're making future cards, because, you know, I don't want to say UFC 315 is bad looking, but in terms of UFC 315, which is your next pay-per-view, guys, it is just nowhere near the quality of this. Obviously, main event, Bilal Muhammad, Jack Del Malena. Bilal has no hype. You could put Islam in front of him. I don't know how you could get hype from Bilal, so best for business decision is Jack Del Malena winning. Co-main event, Valentina Manfiorot. Valentina good fights are far and few in between, so we'll have to see what happens there. Alexa Grasso, Nelly Silva is a great fight. I just don't expect it to be pay-per-view level excitement, unfortunately. Jose Aldo, Amin Zahabi. I don't know why Jose's still fighting. I'm probably going to pick Amin Zahabi, but interestingly enough, you then have Modestus Bukauskas and Ian Kutalabi. Very random there. Mike Mallett, Charles Radke, Jessica Andrade, Jasmine Justavicius, Navajo Sterling, Ivan Erzlan, Brad Katona, Belzad Akman, Marc-Andre Barriot, and Bruno Silva. You get a lot of fantastic fights, but it's just not that high a level quality for pay-per-view. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say for that, but I'm not going to hate on it. We get a good card right there. We'll leave it at that. But 314, phenomenal, guys. I encourage you to go watch the highlights if you didn't see it. But if you are a combat sports fan, which I assume you are, if you listen to this, then you know that this fight was absolutely fantastic. So, or the entire card, I should better say. But Volkanovski and Lopez, more specifically, was amazing. With that, that's all we got. That's all we got, guys. A lot of fun stuff. A lot of fun stuff on today's episode. A little UFC 314 talk, a little NBA, a little new UFC news. Lots of fun stuff. But hold all your horses, guys. No more UFC for the rest of the week, as we are for sure doing a WrestleMania podcast. You know, I'm actually going to go through and rank every single WrestleMania main event of all time. No idea how long that's going to take. And we're going to give our official WrestleMania 41 predictions coming at you Wednesday or Thursday. One of the two. And then with the NHL season ending, you know, all my buddies are NHL fans. I really want to bring them on for a podcast episode. We'll have to see if that can materialize, as we all are very busy. Easter weekend's coming up. So we'll have to see. I will keep you all updated. But guys, have a kick-ass week. Learn stuff. Do stuff. Live the best possible life ever. You only get one life. You only get one life. And struggles come and go, but the good times are what you remember forever. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.